Welcome to The Open Door. We are a podcast of the Biblical Life Counseling Center at Fellowship Church in Knoxville, Tennessee. It is our hope that we bring you conversations that deeply matter in the way you relate and respond to all the seasons of your life.
One thing to remember is just to expect to feel helpless a lot of the time, because you really are helpless. As you've had, felt that you've had, it's a false illusion, as we talked about before, but it's a false illusion that you have some control over these adult children. But at this point in their lives, you really have to make a change between being the sage on the stage who has all the answers to the guide on the side.
Well, welcome everybody to the Open Door Podcast. My name is Matt Schuneman. I'm one of the pastors here on staff at Fellowship Church, and I'm again here with Katie Neely. Hey, Katie.
Hey, Matt.
And we're now into our third of three episodes of this batch of the Parenting Podcast, specifically Parenting Our Child's Heart. And we're excited to be here at this third one. We're sad that it's the end of another batch. Mm-hmm. I always have this feeling.
I know, right?
Of like excitement in the first one.
Yep.
Steadfastness in the middle. And then this one, I'm like, oh, yeah. Dang.
I know. It means we got to do some more work to get ready for the next
That's
one.
That's right. So just going to keep cranking them out because we don't want it to end. But we are at the end of this third one, and we'll be talking about the third decade of parenting. But before we jump into there, let me reintroduce our friends in the room. For the past two episodes and this one, we are so blessed to have Kevin Huggins back with us. Hey, Kevin.
I'm blessed to be with you as well.
Oh, thanks. Well, it's so good for you to be here. Really enjoyed the conversations we've had with you. And as we've done in the past two episodes, we have brought in special guests in each one. And so if you missed the first two, please go back and listen to them just for the sake of hearing some of our other pastors here. You know, our first episode, Christy Landis, kids ministry pastor. The second episode had Blair Benefield, our high school pastor. And today we have Karen Moore. Hey, Karen.
Hey.
Karen, I know a ton of what you do. And sometimes it could be behind the scenes, but there's a lot of people that you've ministered to in your time with us at the church. So share with us a little bit and the listeners of what really kind of what you're doing now, but just kind of your background a little.
Sure. So now I am spending about half my time counseling, mostly individual counseling with women, a little bit of couples. And the rest of the time for the church, I'm doing some teaching in, I'm on the Women's Ministry Committee. So we just had our Rooted series, some of the community groups, a couple of Bible studies, things like that.
Yeah.
I think the reason I'm here on the last part, the third decade, is because we've got, Tom and I have four grown children. Mm-hmm. And so we have been through this, not always gracefully, but it's in the books. We did what we did. And so I can talk about the, you know, pluses and minuses, the failures, and sometimes it worked. And I'm just excited to be here.
Yeah, I'm really glad you're here. You know, you and Tom have had quite the history of ministry and into the, not just here, but to the world, really.
Yeah.
So you got a lot of background, and grateful for you to bring both expertise of ministry, but also in parenting. Yeah. You know, I'm the youngest parent in the room, and so I'm just going to be sitting here soaking it in. I'm talking, but I'm going to be listening. Mm-hmm. So thank you, Karen, for being here. Well, let's just dive back into it. You know, we've talked, Kevin, I'm going to throw this one over to you, but we've talked about a couple decades of parenting, and help us maybe go back to the first two and then why we're talking about this one and what's so important about it.
So in this series, we've been focusing on the heart cries of our kids at the first three decades of their lives. And we talked about decade one, the heart cry that is the most prominent, the one that comes to the forefront of children's thinking, takes up most of their time and energy, is the heart cry for virtuosity. Mm-hmm. I want to be good. And we spent some time talking about what are the parenting implications of that. Mm. How do you come along and shepherd your child's heart at that stage? In podcast two, we talked about that second decade, which is often identified with adolescence, and how although our children, when they're at that stage of their lives, they still long to be seen as good.
Yeah.
But now there's a even stronger heart cry that rises up, and these are all God-given longings.
Right.
But the second heart cry is, I want to be free. It's a heart cry for autonomy. And the big crisis of adolescence, or the task of adolescence, is to find a way to be autonomous and virtuous at the same time. And we talked about how much adolescents need their parents' guidance and shepherding during that time to come along and be allies in helping them resolve that challenge. Here we are, the third decade. And now, although young adults in their 20s are still longing to be seen as good, and they're still longing to be free or autonomous, there is even a third heart cry that's even greater than those two that began to take center stage in terms of their time and energy, and that is, I want to be important. It's the cry for significance. And that's what we're going to talk about in this podcast, how important it is for all of us, whether we're parents or pastors or campus workers, that we understand what the heart cry of kids in their 20s are. And there's this term now that's thrown around in some of the literature talking about the quarter-life crisis. How in the mid-20s, so many of our young adults come to the point where they are not being successful in finding that place, that way to be significant. See, schools tend to educate people for a job or a degree, but they don't really educate people in a way that they can find significance. And a lot of times our culture says the significance you're longing for will come from finding a particular job, finishing a degree, or even getting married. And by midlife or mid-20s, a lot of adolescents are, these are late adolescents, early adults, are discovering, hey, listen, I'm there. I've got a partner. I've got a job. And I don't feel like I'm making a meaningful impact. This is really the longing, the cry to make a meaningful impact, some kind of impact that will last. And so when we say it doesn't come from a job, doesn't come from finding a partner, what does it come from? Well, that's where we have to turn to the scriptures and find what is the biblical pathway for significance. And the Bible says that significance biblically comes from finding a mission that has a lasting impact. And so we, so much of what people in their 20s are in search of is a mission statement for their life, some big idea which they can organize their life around, which will have an impact not just on people's lives, but also on the future, a legacy, so to speak. Oftentimes when young adults are asking this question, what kind of person do I have to be someone who matters, who makes a difference, who means something to other people? They tend to listen to the people around them that say, well, here, you be this kind of person, and that's how you'll be significant. So they often feel like they have to abandon their autonomy. I can't be the person I want to be. I have to be whoever other people want me to be. And that's like chasing soap bubbles. It's empty. It's vanity in the end, according to a book of Ecclesiastes. Other times, they'll hear the world tell them, listen, if you really want to be significant, you have to get ahead by compromising certain values. So you must forfeit your virtuosity. And then, not only at the in the end, if they go that route, do they not feel significant, because significance doesn't come from that. They actually have shame. Instead of feeling virtuous, they experience shame. So this quarter-life crisis is real.
It's legit.
For folks in their 20s. And it's a challenge for all of us that work with young adults in their 20s to come alongside and be friends with them during this time and guide them. And how tremendous could that be if it were their own parents coming alongside? You know, it's interesting. Paul says, we are all God's workmanship, created in Christ Jesus to do good works, which God prepared us in advance to do. That's where our significance comes from. Discovering what it is that God created us to do and equipped us to do, and then starting to do it. In fact, Jesus says, if you seek first God's kingdom and his righteousness, everything else that your heart cries out for will be found. So that's really what we want to talk about during this third podcast, is how do we shepherd the hearts of folks in their 20s that are crying out for significance?
You were talking about the midlife crisis, and I feel that...
the quarter-life crisis.
Right, the quarter-life crisis.
Come on.
I don't know where I'm at in that whole process. I feel like I'm in between the two. But the two pieces that I stick out to me. And I'll say this as an attender of People Pleasers Anonymous, you know, that that piece of freedom of saying like, well, I have to give up my freedom to understand significance in the sense that like, you tell me how to be significant, you friend, colleague, usually boss, you know, that kind of thing. And I felt that so much that it took a long time for me personally to break free of that and to find that definition, to understand like really what God is saying about my significance.
Yeah.
And that that it's even outside of even maybe things I do, but the significance is rested in who I am in Christ. That piece of truth and that virtuosity of like him saying I'm good, you know, was a big piece of even my journey. So it's interesting in this episode because I feel like I'm reflecting more as the child than the parent. Like the first two, I was like, I could see it from that.
Oh, yeah.
But now I'm sitting here being like, y'all are parenting me. Well, Kevin, thank you for that. I want to our special guest, Karen, when we look at how God wants us to parent, to shepherd our child's heart at this age, help us understand a little bit of what that looks like from the angle of significance.
Well, a few things come to mind. One is, in our case, because we had pastored, because we had spent a lot of time in seminary, our kids had always seen us in leadership roles. I never wanted them to have to compartmentalize what work they chose to do as being less significant, less important than what they would call kingdom work, than full-time ministry.
Yeah.
And so there's a concept now in Christian thinking that's called the cultural mandate that we have talked a lot about to our children. And what that is the idea that redemption is not just about being saved from sin, but it's actually being saved to something. And that something is resuming the task for which mankind was originally created. So if we go back to Genesis 1:28, we have the first job description: be fruitful and fill the earth and subdue it. So be fruitful and fill the earth has to do with developing the social world. Build families, churches, schools, cities, governments, laws, that kind of thing. Subdue the earth, meaning to harness the natural world. And we can do that by planting crops, building bridges, designing computers, composing music, all kinds of work that is necessary in our culture. And so it's called the cultural mandate because it tells us that our original purpose was to create culture. Adam and Eve were not designed to live alone in the world, but if they were going to fill the world, mankind was going to organize into cities and countries and larger groups. So what that means to me and hopefully to our kids is that the vocation they've chosen or the profession they've chosen is not a second-class activity. It's not insignificant, but it is the high calling for which they were originally created. Each of us has to serve the Lord with the gifts and talents that we were given by him. And that was God's original purpose before the fall. And the fall did not change that. It just made it more difficult.
Yeah.
So when you think about the ideal existence, it's not an endless vacation, but it's to expand your creative efforts for the glory of God and the benefit of others. And when I think of scripture having to do with that besides Genesis, I think of Ezra in the Old Testament when he was so discouraged. He was in a very dark and depressing transition. And the Bible says that he made confession, weeping and casting himself down. But then the people who had gathered around to confess their sin gave him a mission. And in Ezra 10:4, they tell him, "Arise, for it is your task and we are with you. Be strong and do it."
And I hear that passage as like almost what a parent then can say to their young adult, you know, to say like, be strong and do it. I'm with you in that, you know, and that God is with you in that. But what I love about this concept is that anything that we do has the capability to glorify God in all that we do.
Absolutely.
And how important it is to do these things.
Yes.
That are outside of the walls of the church. And I know we say that all the time in the church, you know, Katie, that there's all this,
yeah,
we, you know, the missions department or the local global impact, you know, how we encourage people to mobilize and get out. But, you know, it's really oftentimes too, just in our jobs and it's in our neighborhoods mm-hmm. and it's in these places mm-hmm. that we can mm-hmm. glorify
well, it
God.
Is. It's because it's doing something bigger than yourself, right? It's doing some, whatever I'm doing, whether it's, you know, whether I'm teaching elementary school kids, whether I'm, you know, being an accountant or whatever your job might be. It's that Colossians passage of whatever you do, do it all to the glory of God. And so I think even as I hear us talk about that, this is the decade where this strong like rise of, I want my life to count for something more, especially as a follower of Christ in light of the gospel. How am I going to make my life count for something more than just myself? And that's what I hear you talking about, Karen, of that's what the people in, when you're talking about in Ezra, of just going, arise and do it. Do the thing that you feel like God has prompted in you.
It's also that idea of kingdom work or the cultural mandate that God has given. It attaches a sacred meaning to what we're doing. We're not going to work to just get a paycheck to bring home and support our families, but we're really doing God's kingdom work and serving that bigger purpose you were thinking of, Katie. And that gives meaning. It gives dignity.
Yeah.
Yes.
And I like so much the fact that Karen, when you and Tom are working with your kids, you're reminding them that kingdom work isn't limited to people that are doing vocational ministry. Mm. But kingdom work is any work that's done to bring God glory and fulfill the mandate that he's given us. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, in a way, we're all ministers of God.
I tried to tell them none of the four have chosen full-time Christian work, which is fine. I tried to tell them that I was pretty sure God wanted at least two of them to become doctors, but so far they have gone their own paths. They have not gone down that path.
You know, that makes me think. I was listening to another podcast. This was several months ago.
How dare you listen to something else?
Right? It was kind of an issue of parenting. And one of the things, I think it might have even been Andy and Sandra Stanley, if I'm remembering correctly, where they talk about, you know, when their kids, I think they had three, they had this conversation with their kids of kind of saying, hey, you know, right before they went to college, if you don't know what you want to do before you go to college, can we, as the people that love and know you best, give you some ideas, right? Just some ideas of what we see in you, your giftings, your bent, your, you know, your personality. And if you don't know, can we speak into that? And then if you get into it a couple of years and you begin to determine and discover something other, then we support that. But just, you know, it's just this idea of we want to call out, even back to the things we talked about in the first day, we want to call out the things that we see in you, the good, your wiring. And so I think that's a way, even as I'm hearing you talk, Karen, of that we can shepherd their heart in this decade of like, here are the things we see in you. You know, I mean, it's ultimately your choice.
Mm. That's a great idea.
You know? I love that. Mm-hmm. I love that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Karen, to not go too far down the rabbit hole, where else does your mind go with this one?
Well, one thing that I think of almost immediately, just because my kids are, the youngest just turned 30, so they have just exited this decade, and we don't have a podcast for 30s to 40s, so I think parenting is supposed to be finished.
That's a special episode that's coming later.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So one thing is that I think for all of us, for most of us, there was a crisis time. I think it usually comes in your late teens or your 20s. You have to learn to depend on the Lord for yourself. There are some things your parents can still speak into and do for you and help you with, but there are some things you do alone in life. And I think about the book of Judges where they came into the land, they conquered some of the Canaanite nations. And in Judges 2, it talks about the fact that God left some of those Canaanite nations in order that the new generation in Israel, the one that had not conquered nations, might learn to know war in order that he could teach war to those who had not experienced it or learned to fight. And I think that's just true for every generation. Every generation, no matter the home they grew up in, has to learn how to walk with the Lord in their lives, to take the crises that come into their lives and the decisions that are going to be unique to that person, just as we have had, you know, school courses chosen for us by the Lord, things that maybe we wish, maybe I wish I'd had Katie's, or maybe I wish I'd had yours, Matt, but he picks the ones that are going to grow me. Yeah. And he does the same for my children.
Yeah, that's
so good. I think three of the four of our adult children went through something in their 20s or early 30s that really challenged their faith and caused them either to grow closer to the Lord or to turn away from him. One of them was made a choice to pursue a career in an industry that's notoriously difficult to really live a Christian life in the midst of. And for now, he's chosen to turn away from the Lord. And we had another who made a choice to move across the country, quit his job, and pursue a dream that just didn't turn out the way he hoped it would. But it has grown him, though I would never have chosen that for him. Mm. It has caused him to desperately depend on the Lord. Mm. So yeah. It's been a good thing.
Wow. You know, Karen, what I hear you saying is that our kids can find significance in more than one way.
Yes.
And one of the ways that they can find significance is in adversity, in facing challenges and coming through them and learning to attach meaning to them and realizing that adversity is never wasted. If you respond in a way and learn what God wants you to learn from it, and when you come out, you're often better equipped for that mission he's created you for. In fact, so many people find their mission, so many young people, in the midst of adversity. They suffer something and they discover, hey, I learned something from this and I can turn around and serve others through it.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So we often find our mission, we find our significance by going through hardship and adversity, and see parents that are constantly trying to rescue their children from adversity often are short-circuiting that and preventing their kids to find their mission, their meaning, their purpose for living in the midst of the hardships and challenges they've had to face.
I think I am seeing the wording to a diagram that you have drawn once or twice, where when God calls you to a more intimate relationship with him, it's never a straight line from where I am to there, but there's always a dip that represents a crisis or some hardship that causes you to have to call out to him.
The valley of humiliation.
I was about to say it. The wording is just humiliating.
Yes.
We've been there. Yeah. Well, Karen, any other thoughts with that?
One other thing. This is sort of a humiliation for our children, but I think as parents, this is a time when some of the holes in our kids' and our adult children's learning tends to show up. We had one adult child who had moved away, had lived away for several years. And as he was home one time and we discussed mileage differences between places on the interstate, he had never understood that in Tennessee, the interstate exit numbers have to do with the number of miles that it is from the beginning of that interstate in Tennessee. So if you go from interstate exit 112 or 110 to 112, you've traveled 2 miles. Mm-hmm. He thought they were just numbered sequentially. Mm-hmm. So I think
easy to not know. So just telling you.
Full transparency. We've had this conversation before recording and Katie was like,
I learned something new.
What?
I can't believe you named names on that one. But in all fairness, there are states that still number them that way. But
because that's not confusing.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
But anyways.
So just an example, but you find these holes that somehow, you know, the other kids may have picked up, but this one missed. And I think when that happens, it's really important that person feels really humiliated anyway, that, you know, everyone else, the other siblings are laughing about it. And it's just a time when you feel as though everyone else knows and you don't know. And I think that's a good time to not be surprised, not to laugh at them, not to humiliate them further. But, you know, we all have holes. I still have holes. Things that, for example, today, as I learned from you, Matt, what scat is in a song.
For those that don't know, old jazz, R&B, scatting is not singing words, but singing notes. And Ella Fitzgerald.
Yeah.
I was talking to Brent Crenshaw about George Benson. And anyway, so we always learn something.
Yes, we have holes in our learning.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
But I love that in the sense that we don't humiliate. And I think that plays into each decade is that like, we don't humiliate, we come alongside, we love throughout. And I think that's just so good. And so when we look then, and I keep saying we, but I feel like I'm more the child still. But okay, so Katie, when we look at our children or our young adult children, for those that are listening that have young adult children, what are those warning signs then that like this significance piece is missing in their child's heart?
You know, one of the first thing that comes to mind is this idea of what we might call magical thinking. I think that's what we talked about. That's what you called it, Kevin, last week. I think it was a good way to frame up this idea that in some way these young adults are kind of waiting for their ship to come in. They're waiting for something to fall in their lap. And that makes sense. If they still don't quite know their deeper purpose, their significance, then it makes sense that they're kind of waiting. And that might manifest itself in lack of commitment or lack of settling down because they don't yet know, what am I supposed to be? It's kind of this searching. So if you see that or experience that in your young adults, that might be an indicator that they are still trying to kind of fulfill this deeper cry of purpose or significance in their life. You said this, I think the last podcast, maybe both times you brought it up, Kevin, but this kind of postponed generation, right? These Peter Pans of, I don't really want to grow up. Mm-hmm. And I don't really think that's birthed in, oh gosh, because adolescence is so amazing. I think it's probably more because I don't quite yet know what or where or how, you know, it can be kind of camouflaged as, oh, I mean, living in my adolescence, still being an adolescent into my 20s is just fun. Or is it just because they don't yet know, you know? So that is one warning sign.
Yeah.
Another one is when we were having this just conversation last week about this podcast, I was reminded of a quote that I heard. I remember where I was sitting my freshman year of college in the spiritual formation class. And it was a quote by Frederick Buechner. And basically it's around the idea of calling, around the idea of vocation, of purpose. And he says, the place that God calls you is where your deep gladness and the world's deep hunger meet. Mm-hmm. So when you think about kind of a young adult discovering, being self-defined and trying to figure out what brings me deep joy? What brings me deep gladness because of the way that God has wired me or gifted me? And where does that collide with the world's greatest need? And if they are still in the midst of finding that, which is, I think, what we're talking about, then they're going to be somewhat delayed in that. And so I think as parents, again, I mean, my kids are not in this stage yet, but the more we can, back to what I was saying earlier, kind of call out and say, hey, this is what you're really good at, or this is the way I see you coming to life. When you do X, Y, and Z, you light up, or, you know, those kinds of things. The last thing I would say, just a warning sign that if you guys, whoever, see or experience your young adult starting to exhibit any psychological symptoms. Now, again, not all, because some of them are organic, right? Anxiety, depression. But if you see this happening, it might be a result of them trying to kind of fulfill that heart cry in an illegitimate way, like trying to find significance in things that really don't bring them significance. Mm. And then you see them sort of chronically being depressed or chronically being anxious. That could be an indicator that they have not yet found their purpose or their significance. So the way to foster that might be to kind of help them think, especially if they are a believer, you know, how do we find, what is, like you talk about, Kevin, what is this biblical pathway to finding significance, right? And so it's turning our focus and our affection from us and making it about things that make much of him, things that further his kingdom, whether that's whatever vocation that might be. So those are just things that initially come to mind as warning signs.
You know, another way of thinking about this longing, this heart cry for significance is to think of it as the longing to be big. Mm. You know, when children are at earlier stages, you know, first decade, second decade, they're longing to be grown up. Mm-hmm. And in the 20s, they're grown up now. But sometimes it's like all grown up and nowhere to go. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's, you know, I thought I'd feel bigger when I got here. Mm. And it's amazing that God has put it in our heart to be big, to have a big impact on our world. And yet the world is organized in such a way to keep us feeling small. Mm. That's why I thought it was so critical, what your last point, Karen, when you're talking about some parenting strategies, is when the holes in our young adults' learning are exposed, we could make them feel small as a result of that.
Mm. Yeah.
And that's just joining what the world's trying to do.
That's good.
Is make them feel too small for the job that God created them to do, to convince them that they don't have what it takes to be the man of God or the woman of God that God has created them to be, or to do the work that God's created them to be. Mm. And I think so much of what our job is as a Christian community, Christian families and parents is come alongside these folks in their 20s and help them experience the bigness that God's really created them for, and help them discover how they really are big enough to do something that has an eternal impact.
Yeah.
And what that looks like for each one is going to be unique, because each one is a unique creation from God.
Yeah.
Mm. Yes.
When we think through the heart of these young adults and the difficulty of that, I want to just, for 1 minute, come back to something. You were talking, Katie, about some of the maybe psychological symptoms even that one may experience if they're not meeting this area of significance. Kevin, I don't know if you would speak to this, but I'm concerned about generation of people that not only are missing out on the significance piece, but when you add to the layers of maybe they haven't fully formed virtuosity, they haven't fully formed freedom and autonomy, and now they're seeking significance on top of that, that three layer of difficulty, what can we maybe expect, or what are we seeing from our young adults where they are missing out on all three?
It's all the warning signs here that Katie mentioned a few minutes ago in our podcast. What happens is they're kind of, you might think about it, regression, that they're kind of stuck in earlier developmental stage. Mm-hmm. And so they're not really working on resolving the crisis at that life stage. Of how do I really find a place in this world, a way to have this significant impact that God's created me to be? Instead, they're still wrestling with, how can I be seen as good?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Or good enough?
Yeah.
Any commitment that they might have to make to a career path or to a partner, to building a family, to any kind of mission or purpose is postponed. They're not even thinking about it. Or if they're in adolescence and they're still thinking about autonomy and freedom, the last thing they want to do is make a commitment. Mm-hmm. And the last thing they want to do is to listen to anyone else's advice. And so it's a matter of just proving to the world still, as if they're still just an adolescent stuck in their 15, 16, 17-year-old stage, that I can do anything I want. Yeah. I can be whoever I want. And you're not going to tell me how to do things.
Yeah.
And there we find the person that is just perpetually living from one day to the next, on a whim. Mm-hmm. You know, they having poor impulse control.
Yeah.
It's only as a person becomes self-defined that they can be self-regulated.
Yeah.
And so once a person decides what kind of person they are in their second decade of life, then in the third decade of life, they can start to exercise discipline and sacrifice things in order to accomplish something that's more important to them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So what we see is just postponing the work of the 20s. And so they may end up doing that work in their 40s.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or their 30s.
Mm-hmm. I remember
I raised my hand just then. Sorry.
I remember the first time, this has probably been 5 years ago, I don't know, when I kind of first started counseling. I do some counseling here in our counseling center, but it was the first time I was going to counsel someone that was older than me. Mm-hmm. And I was, I think she was in her mid-50s and here I am. I might not have even been 40 yet. Yeah, I wasn't 40 yet. And I remember feeling really anxious because I'm just like, And I walked out of that first session, and I don't remember who I told. I don't know if it was you, Kevin, or just a co-worker. I don't know. But I remember thinking, oh gosh, just because biological age does not always line up with emotional or spiritual or, you know, and I think that's the point of what you're saying is we cannot just assume that because someone is a certain age, they have walked through these processes and these longings in the way that, in ways that are healthy.
We're really talking about emotional maturity doesn't often match, you know, physical age.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to re-listen to this in 15 years when it's time, because I'm going to need this next one, Karen, of when we look at and we talk to these parents that are listening, what's the most important heart change that they need to make to really parent well at this stage?
Well, this is a place where my failures stand out and are highlighted. when I think of this, I feel like at least the first two of ours were kind of guinea pigs as they were in all of life. One thing to remember is just to expect to feel helpless a lot of the time because you really are helpless as you've had felt that you've had. It's a false illusion, as we talked about before, but it's a false illusion that you have some control over these adult children. But at this point in their lives, you really have to make a change between being the sage on the stage who has all the answers to the guide on the side who listens, gives counsel when you're asked to. And that's a fearful thing. And I think it was Blair talking about in an earlier podcast about not parenting out of fear.
Yeah.
And I think it's really easy to do this because we have been down some of these roads. We've seen where some of these choices lead, and it's not possible to tell your child what to do at this stage of the game. It's when you do that kind of thing, you drive them away and not to you. And I think the maintenance of a relationship, a close emotional relationship with your adult child is really important at this stage because they will need to come sometimes. They will need to say, okay, I've got a flat. If I don't call dad, what is it that I do here? I'm in another state. And so how do I handle this? And sometimes they'll call. And we have had, as we grew, we had that autonomy and that chance to make our own decisions, and they deserve that same freedom. But it's really hard as a parent to sit and watch a child make a decision that you think is not a very wise decision. So that's one thing that for us, we had a little, I don't know if I want to call it a ceremony, but we had a dinner with a very prescriptive purpose for our older two children. We invited some of our friends, couples and singles who had known Andy and Ryan as they had grown, mostly almost since the time they were born, and had watched them grow, watched what they did, watched their character develop and those things. And we had a nice dinner, everybody dressed nicely, and they wrote letters to them ahead of time, commenting on kind of what Katie was saying was going with the Stanleys. This is what we've noticed in you. This is where we've seen you really shine. This is what we think you're really good at. These are some areas that we've really seen the Lord use you in. And we had them read those letters to our adult children. And it was kind of a rite of passage because after that dinner, they were free to call our friends by their first name. And they marked a difference in our parenting so that we still will freely give them counsel, but we try to hold back until they ask. The exception, I would say, is if we see a place that's really a danger signal. I still feel free to offer my opinion once and at least to let them hear it. And only offering it once has been, you know, varying degrees of success as we've gone through. But I think that was a good marker, not only for our adult children, but also for us in that helplessness of wondering how in the world you parent adult children. My parents were not believers, and Tom's parents were, I would say, nominal believers. So we didn't really have a model of how to parent adult children. We just knew some things that we did not want to carry forward and some things we thought were okay. But I would also say, pray without ceasing, because prayer, I think, is a very misunderstood and a resource that we go to less frequently because we don't see immediate results. And prayer is powerful. My adult children can refuse to read a book I send them. They can refuse to take any advice I offer, but there is no defense against the Holy Spirit. And you can send that little missile at the speed of thought to your child. And so I just would encourage everyone. I have probably complained and worried much more than I've prayed, but that is, you know, Peter says that we were born to a living hope. And James tells us that we don't have because we don't ask. And so we get deceived into believing that prayer is our last result, and it means shooting up a missile when we know nothing else to do, rather than this is where I go because the Spirit of God is the one that woos the hearts. So, and I would say too, this is a great time to evaluate your motivation. Am I trying to turn my child in a certain way because I want to validate my style of parenting? It does not look good if I have a prodigal child. And so then we turn to the old manipulation and guilt to try to get them to do what we want. First Corinthians says, let each person lead the life that the Lord has assigned to him and to which God has called him. And so our children need that freedom as well.
The aspect of prayer, I know it can sound simplistic, but it's not simple. Like there's so much that God does behind the scenes that we don't even know. The Holy Spirit is really the one that's, I love that phrase, woo, like, like brings them to himself. We get to be participants in that journey, but it's really him. And that's a really great reminder.
I can't imagine, you know, because I'm not there yet, but I mean, we talked a little bit last podcast about just the adolescent decade to kind of keep your hands open, but they're for the most part still kind of in your hand. I mean, you're kind of, but just that launching, just, I mean, the dependence on the Lord. And I think, I mean, I think there is a choice like we have in all of life. We can choose to really, you know, increase our dependence on the Lord in this season. You know, I'm just imagining it, you know, because I'm not there. Or I can imagine the other option, right? We can see this as an opportunity to grow our dependence on the Lord, or it can feel real threatening, I would imagine, right? And so the alternative is what you're speaking to, Karen, of this like, okay, manipulate guilt, kind of pretend like I have control, all these things that end up feeling, we don't feel free. It feels threatening. And so I just, I don't know, I'm just imagining now and just golly.
As you talk, Katie, in that last question, and I think Kevin talked some too, with all the change that's going on and all the search for significance, it's the thing that's added to that is that this is a really hard transition. When you think about a child who started at age 3, 4, 5, going to school every day, spending 7 hours, 8 hours at school, sitting in classes and then doing sports, their schedule was pretty much set for the day. And after 13 years, whatever, they go to college where they have the freedom to choose classes. They do not have one class right after the other. They have freedom. No mama tells them time for your homework, but a boss expects them to come even if it's summertime. Even if you had a late night, you need to get up and be at work on time. It's a really, there are many changes having to shop for yourself. I know one of mine had a really, really difficult meltdown at Walmart one day looking at dish soap and called home and said, I don't even know how to choose. There are hundreds of choices. What is the correct choice to make? Just the transition is so hard that to try to feel significant in the midst of that while you're trying to adjust to this new life is really hard for some. I mean, we see them in the counseling center.
Well, I want to bring us to a close from this conversation, but into the point of how we can kind of wrap up this episode, but really the whole podcast in itself. And so what we've done is given our special guest a minute or so to kind of reflect on some last words. But today I want to give it to you, Karen, but then I'm going to go around the horn here and give you 30 seconds to a minute to just kind of share one last thought. Karen, what's your kind of final thought for today?
As I think about all the things that we've said, as a good American, I want to take a pill, or I want to have an equation or a formula that says, if you do this plus this, it's going to equal this outcome. And there is nothing in the Christian life that's like, it's actually not like that in any area of life.
Yeah.
You do premarital counseling and you get married in a church and that equals a wonderful marriage. If you discipline your child correctly and you feed them at every meal, you're going to wind up with someone who walks with the Lord. There is no formula.
Mm.
And in a way, that's very comforting because my child's eternal destiny, as well as their walk with the Lord, does not depend on what a good job I did.
Mm.
On the other hand, it's terrifying.
Yeah.
That it's not a formula. It's about relationship with the Lord.
That's really, really good.
That's so true.
Kevin, your thought?
My final thought would be this. At any stage in our child's development, remember, you don't know them as well as you think you know them. And your child doesn't know you as well as you think they know you. And that's probably more true in the third decade than the others, but there's some truth it is. And so the implication of that is keep introducing yourself to your kids.
Mm-hmm.
They are in their 20s, they're much more able now to really get to know you. But you have to keep introducing yourself to them at every stage of their development, letting them know who you really are as a human being, and letting them know about your struggles and what struggles you had in your 20s. But being careful to try to satisfy their curiosity about you, while at the same time, you are fascinated in getting to know them better.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know, so many young people I've talked to have told me my parents don't really know who I am.
Mm.
So many parents I've talked to, especially of young adults, say, my kids don't really know who we are.
Yeah.
And I think so much of the partnership that parents and children could have at each stage depends upon this natural curiosity that comes with getting to know each other better.
Mm-hmm.
And, a lot of times we struggle as parents of adults, parents of young adults, with what do we say to them? What do we do? The more you know who your child is, the easier it will be to decide what's appropriate to say to them, what's not, what will be helpful, what will not be.
Yeah.
So never give up introducing yourself to your kids or inviting them to introduce themselves to you.
I love that.
That's good.
All right, Katie, you got to follow those two.
Golly. You know, though, I just, two short thoughts. The first thought is, I'm just so thankful. I feel like the information or the conversations we've had in these last three episodes are just such great insight for us as parents to know. To know that at each decade there is kind of a longing that takes center stage. And just to have that knowledge, again, knowledge without doing, it's not just information, but the hope would truly be that it would transform the way that we parent. And then the second thing is this, all three podcasts, we've talked about that last question of what has to shift in us as parents.
Yeah.
And all of that starts with being willing. I've said this in other podcasts. Being willing to examine ourselves. And that is so hard sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I'll just real quickly say, even from all that we've said and even examining ourselves, we're going to see a lot of the areas where we have fallen short as parents. And one of the things that struck me the most, and I'll go back, Kevin, to your baseball metaphor, which I love, but batting 400 in parenting's good,
you're a heavy hitter.
Yeah, 4 out of 10. Well, and to that end, like, let's compare it, is that batting 300 in the MLB, you're an all-star.
Yeah,
you're,
you told me that we had this conversation outside of it.
So if you hit the ball 3 out of 10 times, you get paid $1 billion.
Dang, really? A billion, you're exaggerating.
$1 million.
Okay, there we go.
It's closer. But as a parent, you do it right 4 to 5 out of 10 times. You're doing it well. And that's such freedom to like keep examining myself, keep pursuing things out of love and not out of fear. I love that you brought that up, Karen, because that's a thread throughout all three. And so we hope that these have encouraged or given you some thoughts around how you're parenting, because Your job is so important. God has placed these children in your life for a reason. Mm-hmm. And I have to remember that daily. Especially when they're doing something wrong, but even when they're doing right, I need to remember these are blessings from God that mm-hmm. I get to be a part of. Mm-hmm. And so we thank you for listening to us. We are excited to keep making these for you. Please continue to listen and share with us your thoughts. And we will talk to you hopefully very soon.
Bye-bye.
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 Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Thank you for listening to The Open Door. You can find more episodes of Open Door by searching Open Door Fellowship Church on your podcast player. Or you can go to podcast.fellowshipknox.org. Subscribe and give us a rating. It will help us get the word out. If you have questions or suggestions on topics that we can cover, please email us at opendoor@fellowshipknox.org. We want to also thank those that made these episodes possible. Thank you to our counseling team for help creating these conversations. Thank you to Scott Bradford for recording and editing. Thank you to Megan Allen for researching and writing our show notes. We could not have done this without you all.